Our next case this morning is 2023-0514 in the matter of RGM. Good morning, Mr. Dever. On behalf of the appellant, the Muskingum County Adult and Children Protection Services.
Thank you, Chief Justice Kennedy, and may it please the court. My name is John Dever. I'm an assistant prosecutor for Muskingum County's Prosecutor's Office, and I'm here today on behalf of the Muskingum County Adult and Child Protective Services. And what I'm asking this court to do today is reverse the Fifth District's opinion in NRE RGM. There's two RGMs. They're same date of birth. They're twins. The Fifth District decided a case about due process. And how it got there is by applying this case's decision in NRE Hoffman. And due process is the fun doctrine that has wonderful definitions that says its definition is as opaque as its importance is lofty. So it's a tricky to apply doctrine. And what the Fifth District did was specifically find that in a legal custody case after an abuse and neglect and dependency proceeding, that a mother or another parent like a father has a cross-examination right, which functionally means that even though this court's juvenile rule 34B2 says hearsay can be admitted as long as it's material and relevant, that you can't admit a psychologist's report that would be relied on without that psychologist's testimony. And where I think the Fifth District erred is that the Fifth District did so because it found a legal custody case sufficiently analogous to a permanent custody case. And why is that wrong? I think it really is simply is that a permanent custody case terminates all parental rights, while a legal custody case really doesn't do much of anything to a parental rights. And
what do you mean by doesn't do much of anything?
Thank you, Your Honor. It doesn't do much of anything. In an abuse, neglect, or dependency proceeding, there's the adjudicatory hearing, and that deprives the parents' parental rights, their paramount right to custody of their child. And after that, this court has held, there's an implicit finding of parental unfitness that permits a court to order custody to a person not the parent. So in this case specifically, there had already been an adjudication of dependency on the twins, RGMs, and the legal custody case, at that point in time, mom no longer had custody. So it really just reaffirmed the status quo and completed the proceeding on the complaint, completed disposition, and the court was no longer involved.
Counsel, what if the shoe was on the other foot and at this hearing, hypothetically, the mother presented a report that completely contradicted Dr. Wolfgang's report? Wouldn't you object to that?
No, Your Honor. On the same reason that hearsay would be admissible, I think the court could weigh the reports. And at that point, if I knew the mother had a report, I think as the adversarial process that we have, I could subpoena whatever the preparer of that report and bring them in to cross-examine them.
How would the court weigh it if they didn't have you, the advocates, testing these opinions that are expressed in the report? How would they be able to say which one had veracity and which one didn't?
I think at that point, it would be difficult for the court, and I think in an adversarial process, sometimes counsel doesn't give the best information. You know, there's a varying degree of how the quality. I do think it would be difficult, but it is a best interest test. I think they just have to get there, but they could just deny whoever's motion and it would just be proceeding on. So I think if it didn't find anyone met their standard of proof, it could just deny the motions. And
also,
I think that would...
Couldn't the mother have subpoenaed the doctor?
Yes.
Or asked for a continuance?
Yes. And here, neither of that happened. And I think there's some discussion in appellee's brief about how in a criminal context under the confrontation clause, that's not sufficient, and that's the Melendez-Diaz case. And I think it's important to distinguish that the confrontation clause, and sometimes it's just called the right to cross-examine, they're very different. I think confrontation clause is exclusively for criminal cases where in an adversarial process, you can just subpoena somebody under the compulsory process available here to the mother. So, yes, yeah, she could have.
And so Juvenile Rule 34B2 actually permitted this type of evidence, which could be, what I'm saying is that Child and Family Services followed the rules of procedure, correct?
Yes. There was a following of the juvenile rules of procedure. And I think that's kind of what I just want to emphasize. By the Fifth District's opinion, it's implicitly saying that this court's juvenile rules of procedure are constitutionally inadequate under the Due Process Clause as to the admission of psychological reports. And I think that would be an exceptional case because this court has generally incorporated procedural protections that are due process adequate into the juvenile rules of procedure. So I would just ask also to this court in reversing the Fifth District to kind of reaffirm that principle that this court is generally applying constitutional protections or incorporating them into the juvenile rules of procedure.
So you're saying, first of all, juvenile rules allowed it. Second of all, there were other avenues where cross-examination of Dr. Wolfgang could have taken place at the hearing. But you're also saying that this wasn't a permanent custody hearing. It wasn't the final hearing, correct?
Yes, this was not a permanent custody hearing.
And finally, what is the overriding goal of this type of proceeding? Is it to protect the parents' rights or to protect the child's benefit and health and well-being? These were two twins just born. I know there's a balancing, but what does the case law say?
It's statutory, and the case law says it's the best interest of the children. At this point, once the parental rights have been kind of encroached upon by an adjudicatory hearing, you move on to just the best interest, and that's the primary purpose. So any effect on the mother's custody, I think, is subordinated to that best interest pursuit.
Thank you.
And when I think it's just important to also talk about here, so the juvenile rules of procedure, and they were followed, I do think there's an argument always lurking in the background that there could be due process considerations that make the rules of procedure inadequate. I think there's a barrage of facts that happen in court that might just make it intolerable. And I want to refer to the really important case for the Fifth District was this court's NRE Hoffman. That was a permanent custody case. And there is a statute in that case that the NRA Hoffman trial court used that said a guardian ad litem report shall be submitted, but not under oath. And that trial court said, well, my hands are tied. You can't cross-examine the guardian ad litem. It was highly conclusory, very important to the ultimate issue. And at that point, that mother was kind of harmed. It was permanent custody, all her parental rights, her right to say she's a mom, the right to visit, the right to object to an adoption, all of those were on the table, and she wasn't allowed to test the veracity of a guardian ad litem report. So in that case, that trial court specifically prohibited an available and present witness from being cross-examined. While in this case, what happened is a functional bar to hearsay that is otherwise admissible under the rules. And I think that's kind of what the appellee is asking for. And to get there, I think a court needs to go through the factors that this court has applied from Eldridge v. Matthews, the U.S. Supreme Court case on due process, that there are stakeholders in every due process case. For every due
I guess what I'm struggling with is, why is it that complicated? I mean, their argument essentially is that due process gives them a right to cross-examine the witnesses against them. They did not attempt to subpoena or otherwise bring that witness in there. So why shouldn't that just end the matter right there?
I think
why do we have to go any further than that? They did not attempt to cross-examine him.
I think it does end the matter.
Is there any reason they couldn't have subpoenaed the witness?
In this case, no. I think the reason due process is important is because what the Fifth District did get to is that there was this right to cross-examine and did not find persuasive that the mother could have just subpoenaed Dr. Wolfgang here. So the Fifth District said that pretty much created a functional bar to hearsay and carved out from this court's juvenile rules of procedure that hearsay is otherwise admissible in a legal custody hearing. And
I guess what I struggle with is, okay, even if they're right that there's a right to cross-examine, that doesn't seem to make there any error in this case because they didn't attempt to cross-examine the witness.
I agree. I think when I'm discussing the Eldridge v. Matthews factors, it's just if the Fifth District even tried to get there, because I think in a criminal context, just because a hearsay is admissible under the rules, you still have that confrontation clause analysis, and that's kind of what they're importing in. And I think you can only get there if you go through Eldridge v. Matthews and find that when you weigh all those stakeholders, the government's interest, the risk of erroneous deprivation, the added value of the procedural safeguard, that rule is appropriate. And I really don't think this case should have ever got here. I think it's pretty simple. But the Fifth District did that. And I think it did that through a bad analogy, saying that a legal custody is sufficiently analogous to a permanent custody hearing because legal custody is meant to be permanent. And my point is, functionally, it just doesn't do anything like that. It doesn't take any more parental rights. It just transitions custody. And here, it didn't even transition custody. The aunt had temporary custody, and now she had legal custody. So I don't think it is that complicated. But if a court wants to find an extra due process right, something up and beyond, above the juvenile rules of procedure or any rules of procedure, you need to go through a due process analysis, such as that from Eldridge v. Matthews. Other than that, the state would like to reserve its remaining 3 minutes and 30 seconds for rebuttal if there's no further questions at this time.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Hickson. On behalf of KG.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Richard Hickson, and I am here today representing KG, and she's the mother of the twin girls, RGM and RGM, in the appellee in this matter. Your Honors, this case is, in essence, it's only about really one thing. And that is, what is fundamentally fair in a legal custody proceeding out of a juvenile court abuse, neglect, and dependency case?
So if this right to cross-examine, this ability to cross-examine this witness was so important, why not subpoena the witness?
The answer to that is, you know, there's things that don't appear in the record that could answer that question, and there's some things that do. I would refer you to a part of the record, and I believe it is line, let me look, a transcript. It would be the transcript of the legal custody hearing, page 16, line 25, to page 17, line 5, where trial counsel for KG referenced the fact that she had actually subpoenaed an expert witness to support, but they required a $750 fee up front.
This witness?
It's a different expert in this case, but this is just merely an example of a bar to attempting that sort of thing. And
that's not a bar to attempting that sort of thing, is it?
It doesn't mean that.
She could have.
She certainly
the witness if she thought the witness's fee was exorbitant, she could have brought that up with the court.
Certainly, she could have done that, and I guess my argument would be that it's not a good precedent to set in other similar cases, because, you know, to hold like that would cause individuals in KG's position to, you know, have to spend exorbitant amounts of money.
We don't know that. There's nothing in the record that says that it would cost exorbitant amounts of money, does it, in this case?
I mean, not. I'm just speaking as more of a public policy argument, Your Honor, that it would be a difficult situation for parents in her situation to, they'd have to spend money, a lot of money and resources just to protect their due process rights. And I just don't think that that's fair to parents in these sorts of situations. Dr. Wolfgang is a psychologist. He conducted a psychological evaluation of my client, KG, and that psychological evaluation provided recommendations, prognosis for unification, all those sorts of things. Soon afterwards, the agency, Muskingum County Child Protective Services, filed for legal custody. And at that hearing, despite the fact, despite the fact that KG's trial counsel objected on the record for due process considerations, the trial court overruled that, admitted the report, and relied on those findings. My argument is that is unfair to KG, and because there's no opportunity to cross-examine her. And the important part of that is that she did have the opportunity to subpoena her, or to subpoena the expert in this case. But the subpoena is not a protection. It's not a substitute for the right to due process, right to cross-examine. And I don't believe that. And the reason that I've cited, I understand that it's a criminal case, and it's not necessarily, different. It's a different context. But the reason I cited Melendez-Diaz is because I feel like the logic that court used should be persuasive in the reasoning here. In particular, Justice Scalia states that, and it's the Confrontation Clause, it is, and it's different than but I believe that the right to cross-examine out of a due process clause should be treated substantially similarly. And I believe that they spoke a lot about subpoena power being a substitute for confrontation right. Justice Scalia did not agree with that.
But this isn't the confrontation right.
Right.
So this is...
Well, I believe it is a substantially similar right.
Well, if it's substantially similar, then the whole confrontation clause is just redundant? It's all just due process?
Well, I believe it's more of like it's specific. It deals specifically with criminal cases. I believe that the case law has evolved the due process clause out of the right of confrontation out of a liberty interest in the care and custody of their children. And I believe that was done in Ray Hoffman as appellant. That was the primary case law out of this court.
But this wasn't terminating parental rights. This was making sure that the kids were placed in care where the state would be able to be assured that they were being taken care of properly.
That's correct. This was not a permanent custody hearing. This was a legal custody hearing. This was a final hearing. They were granting legal custody, and the statute states that legal custody is intended to be permanent in nature.
But isn't this for the benefit of the children? I mean, babies, by the time we got to the hearing in June, the children were roughly 9 months old. They certainly had no ability to speak for themselves or care for themselves. Are you certain that? I mean, I don't think it's a fait accompli that it would terminate parental rights. Is there any case law that says it would be, or statute?
So I'm not saying that it doesn't terminate parental rights. It deprives the custody. it deprives KG of the custody, care and custody of her children.
But did, I mean, couldn't the mother seek visitation?
Yes, she does have visitation rights. And there is case law that states that legal custody is sufficiently analogous. I guess I would ask this court to find persuasive the Ninth District's holding in In Re AA, which is a substantially similar case to this one. And it states that the fundamental right to due process is not confined to proceedings in which the parties face a termination of their parental rights. Legal custody is a less drastic disposition than permanent custody because it does not sever all parental rights. Nevertheless, a disposition of legal custody to another person potentially terminates a parent's constitutional right to custody of her child because that placement is intended to be permanent in nature. While legal and permanent custody are admittedly different things, they are sufficiently analogous to afford the child's parents the procedural and substantive protections available under the law. So that's the line of logic that I am asking this court to adopt.
So I just want to make sure I understand what you're saying. You are not challenging the finding that the child is dependent.
That's correct.
So when the finding of dependency was made, where was the child placed? In the care of the agency, in the care of a foster parent, in mother's home? What?
I would believe that the I'd have to review the entire record, and I would ask the court to defer to that as to specifically where they were placed. Typically, in my experience, that is done. Temporary custody is continued with the agency while they find a placement.
Correct. So here is a family placement.
It is now, yes.
So the challenge to legal custody, the placement of a family member, but you're not challenging the dependency. So there's no dispute that these children are dependent.
There's no dispute, Your Honor.
So the only question we have now is where will the children live as mother facilitates a case plan?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
I believe that, you know, I don't believe legal custody and permanent custody are, there's the Hoffman court, you know, it was a permanent custody case, but the decision did not focus on that fact. It was very focused on the fundamental fairness aspect of it, and in that decision, the Hoffman court cited numerous non-parental rights cases.
But the Wolfgang's report wasn't about the children, it was about the mother, correct?
That's correct.
So, you're arguing that she should have had the opportunity to cross-examine him?
Yes.
Or get her own expert, but she's essentially given up on the issue of her ability to have custody of them, correct?
I wouldn't say that. I think that she has the right to challenge that custody finding, and it's not necessarily her having custody that she's challenging. She's challenging that particular she's challenging. Ideally, she would like the children back. Yes. But she wants more time to work her services and all that sort of thing.
What are the kids supposed to do?
They're
here, they're growing, they need right. nurturing and care. So is it the placement?
I guess I would say that I believe that it's a balance to the concern of juvenile court is that of the juvenile court proceeding in these types of cases, the best interests of the children. That has to be balanced appropriately with the due process rights of parents. And I believe that's the focus, and I think the juvenile rules reflect that. On the very first page, page one of the juvenile rules, they allow hearsay testimony to be admissible, but that provision doesn't take away due process rights of parents. The very first rule is 1B, states that the rules are to be liberally interpreted and construed so as to affect the just determination of every juvenile court proceeding by ensuring the parties a fair hearing and the recognition and enforcement of their constitutional and other legal rights. So right there in the juvenile rules, I would argue this court's placed importance on the due process protections in juvenile court proceedings as well as the best interests of the children. So I would say it's more of a balancing test in this case.
Thank you.
Importantly, I don't believe that there are numerous efficiency concerns that are raised if the court were to hold in my favor, in KG's favor, as to, you know, the cost of subpoenaing experts to support their reports, and scheduling concerns in the trial courts and all that. I think that all those concerns can be solved by creative scheduling, depositions. There's a lot of examples of different strategies that trial courts could use.
But she could have subpoenaed Dr. Wolfgang to the hearing, correct?
She could have filed a subpoena, yes. That's possible. She did object my understanding is that it was expected that the agency would be the one subpoenaing the expert, and they were unaware of that. That expert was not going to be at the hearing. So that's what my understanding of the situation is. The hearing occurred and the expert was not there, there was an objection to that. That was overruled. So we believe that the failure of the agency to subpoena on that basis is a denial of the right to cross-examination. Which we believe, because the legal custody hearing and permanent custody hearing are sufficiently analogous, as I stated previously, we believe that admitting the report and relying on that in their holding to grant legal custody to the maternal aunt, we believe that is a violation of due process. So that's all I have, Your Honors. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dever, you have 3 minutes and 27 seconds left.
Thank you. I believe that this case is simple, that it should never have got here. It was a simple application of the juvenile rules, but it got here kind of by that confused, sufficiently analogous when the Fifth District extended this court's NRA Hoffman holding. And so I just want to briefly say, I acknowledge that sometimes the due process clause can create a criminal-like confrontation right, and that can be seen in the juvenile delinquency process. NRA Galt explicitly creates a confrontation right. But this court has said, in cases also about juvenile delinquency, since it is created under the due process clause, the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, or Article 1, Section 16 of the Ohio Constitution, it's more malleable. So whatever confrontation right is created doesn't have to have that same force as the criminal confrontation right. And here, I would say illegal custody is just so far from a criminal case in terms of the stakes and the interest at play that it really should never even get close to it. And it's wholly adequate in an adversarial process with court-appointed counsel that they subpoena a witness or just request a continuance to obtain the attendance. We're going to have court-appointed counsel. That's the adversary process. So I just think this court's juvenile rule is wholly adequate. And just to really emphasize, a permanent custody case, even though it's the death penalty of family law, doesn't have criminal-like protections across the board through the due process clause. Yes, it has a malleable right to appointed counsel. That's the Lassiter U.S. Supreme Court case, so not even having the right to appointed counsel. Statutory here, yes, but in the U.S. Constitution, not always. Santosky v. Kramer, it doesn't even have the burden of proof, which is another procedural safeguard. It's clear and convincing is the minimum. And of course, there can always be more protection than the constitutional floor, but that's kind of up for legislatures, this court to decide when it has to deal with these kind of questions. How do we want the practical proceeding to look? And just to emphasize with a legal custody hearing, these are really tough cases. You take children from their parents. Here you have a mentally ill but loving mother who wanted her kids. You take them from their parents. Children's Services tries their best, limited funds, to place the kids in the best home possible. And once you get past the higher procedural safeguards that are in an adjudicatory hearing where you are kind of encroaching in that protected liberty interest, it's just the best interest of the children. And there are really strong efficiency reasons to have a looser rule because it allows the court to consider all sorts of streams of information, even by pro se parties. They can bring in their counseling reports or whatever, and they can admit it, and the court can consider it and really try to get it right, because I think that's what these cases are about, getting it right. So while there's a lot that be said about due process, this case just doesn't reach that lofty height, but that's not to say it isn't really important. But its importance is completely reconciled by this court's own rules. Treat it importantly. The parent has a compulsory process right. Statutorily, they have appointed counsel. Just have the adversary process play out. And with all that said, I just ask this court to reverse the Fifth District and affirm the trial court's grant of legal custody. Thank you.
Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement, and you will receive a decision from the court.